Welcome back to the Coaches Rising podcast. Today's guest is Juliet Begler, and I invited Juliet on because someone in our team has worked with Juliet, and they said she's just incredible, an incredible coach. And that person also works with Juliet in a coaching organization, and they said Juliet's just invited back to coach more and more. The more people work with her, the more they want to work with her, the more they want their teams to work with her. So I just was like, well, what's Juliet? Who is Juliet? What is she doing? How is she coaching in a way that's having her be in such demand? So that's what we're going to unpack today. We'll talk about Juliet's work. We'll talk about how she views her role as a coach evolving in our times. We'll talk about the big shifts that Juliet went through on her journey that allowed her genius to shine through. And I really felt this palpably as we moved through this conversation. There was a palpable felt sense of Juliet's presence and genius as a coach. So we'll talk about how Juliet began to access that. And we'll talk about the inspirations in her work. Where does she feel like she's heading? What are current lines of inquiry she's holding? And for those of you that are interested in contacting Juliet, if you feel inspired listening to this conversation, we're going to put Juliet's email on the podcast page in the show notes. You'll be able to find it there. So let's dive in. Here's the podcast with Juliet Begler. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. So Juliet, I'm very excited for our conversation. And to put you on the spot again, I'm going to say what I just said to you, which was Kareem, who many people on this might know because he's done some podcasts, who works in Coaches Rising. He said, you've got to talk to Juliet because she's my coach. And, you know, in this organization where I also work, Juliet's the coach that's just always getting invited back to do more work with people, people who've been coached with her want to be coached with her more often. And so, you know, I just was like, I've got to talk to Juliet and find out who she is and what she's doing with her clients that's having her be in such demand. So I just wanted to put you on the spot a little bit there and see how you are in this moment.
It takes my breath away a little bit. As I said before, to be in the spotlight. And it feels like an exciting moment to, I suppose, to be more visible outside of that extraordinary intimacy of a one-to-one coaching engagement, to be on a platform sharing. And it's also a little daunting because so much of what happens in the coaching engagement is co-created through that meeting. So I'm also with curiosity about what gets co-created here with us, and hoping that's interesting for the listeners.
I love that possibility. And I think, I think let's explore that, huh? Could you say a little bit about, just, you know, give us a brief overview of what you're doing, like you're a coach, and yeah, just tell us about yourself a little bit.
Yeah. One of the biggest pieces on my horizon at the moment is parenting. Having relocated a daughter from a small community school in southern Portugal into a small community school in southern UK, and just being the container, trying to be the firm ground on which she can, from which she can leap into a new part of her life. Work-wise, doing one-to-one coaching, holding group conversations in which coaches or facilitators are making meaning and deepening their understanding of what they're doing. I'm also in the process of preparing an online course, which I've done a few times before with a colleague from the community I was part of in Portugal, exploring potential for post-capitalist ways of being in the world together, looking at what's already being done and what might be possible for people who are feeling dissatisfied with the current system but can't see ways around it. So that's a big piece of exciting work.
That tees up a question before we explore the work you're doing with your clients. And actually, I'd love to talk about the groups as well, but how do you see your role evolving in our times? You know, as we just checked in before we hit record, you know, we were just remarking on the remarkable world. And so what's your sense of what that evokes in you as a practitioner, and how you serve your clients and what your clients are needing?
I have a sense increasingly of needing to be at the edge of myself, at the edge of what I know, at the edge of what I've experienced, in order to be available for what is emerging, for what is, I don't know, I've never experienced. I quite often find myself in coaching conversations, having to pause while some sense that I can't quite locate coalesces into language that I can then offer out without even knowing if it really hits the mark. So I quite often find myself saying, I don't know how this is going to sound. Let's get it out and then we'll have a look at it together. And I say it so often, sometimes I even wonder if it's a contrivance, but I actually really don't know. That it feels like the tectonic plates are in such extraordinary flux, kind of economically, sociologically, geopolitically. And as I and we become increasingly aware of the weirdness of normal, the things that I used to take as given, I'm questioning. And that goes for kind of, gosh, race, gender, identity, profession, vocation, accreditation, everything feels like it's up for curious reevaluation. So, yeah, quite often at the edge of myself in one-to-one and group conversations. Not sure if that answers the question anymore.
That's beautiful. There's a lot that brings up. Before I ask about your experience of that, do you said you often use that phrase of I don't know how this is going to sound. I can't remember the exact words you use, but do you find that there are common themes to what you say after that? Or is it that it's very, of course, it's going to be very unique to the person in front of you and you're responding to the connection and to them. But do you find there are themes to how you answer those?
What, to what comes through in the experiment of articulating the thing I didn't know before. I don't know if there's a theme to the content. I'm just feeling into that. I think if there's a theme, it might be in the drawing on kind of big narratives. Into kind of direct here and now experience and just checking, does that help? Like, does it help to recognize that we're in a big no, it's even hard to say it because sometimes it feels so edgy to say it, but to say something like, gosh, we're in the process of recognizing how much we are the colonizers and how much we are colonized. And how much our expectations and even our imagination has been formed by processes that we're living without being able to see them. So just that sense of the expectation that I'm right on the edge now, I'm not quite sure what's going to come. The expectation that the future is plannable, the expectation that one will get to a certain point in one's career and then retire. My clients mostly seem to be working towards that, but I'm not sure that's a given. And in that moment, I'm not sure if we share the same consensus reality. So how to be in that in a coaching conversation? And then I have moments of feeling very insecure while I'm waiting to see what how that lands with the client and what they bring back. Because they might not be questioning our identity as colonizers who were colonized so much before that and maybe don't think our own thoughts. Does that make sense? It's a bit abstract.
It's not abstract to me, and it makes a lot of sense. And I think it's having me think. That's why I asked the question about our times and the role we're being invited to play, because in a sense, the word coach was formed in a particular time, and many, as we've spoken about on this podcast, that the we're living in a time between worlds, to use that often used phrase. And so the deep beliefs, the things we've inherited about what it means to be human, to live a good life, some of those are being questioned, many of those, and the institutions around them, such as, will I be able to save up my money and retire, or what does it mean to be successful? So therefore, I think it's important. There's a couple of things I want to say. One, that is it a coach's role to kind of have one foot in our current world and one foot in what is emerging, and then, not just play business as usual, but compassionately offer, I don't know if it's provocation or reflection that, invites the client beyond the current structures in which they create them, their world. Which may be confronting, but in service of something good, So that's one thing. And then the other thing is, I think you're beautifully modeling, in a sense, the way of being that we're being invited into, which is like sense making at the edge. It actually, if we're to, navigate these times and inquire very deeply, it does actually bring us to the edge of the way we construct our world and some of these ways we've codified what things are. And that's a wholly embodied affair, like it's not just rational. We need our whole body and hearts and nervous system in that.
Yeah, me too. And it's very, my own experience of it is it can feel very destabilizing, which then brings other questions about my kind of role as coach. And I do little inverted, air inverted commas, as I'd say, role, because I have a sense that the idea of a role in itself feels somehow fixed, or ready-made. And sometimes people come to me expecting a something identifiable as a coach. And if I'm at the edge of myself, I don't feel very identifiable as a coach. But it does feel like a more creative space because I'm meeting at the edge of what I can articulate in the encounter with someone whose world I don't know. And then we're co-creating in the unknown, hopefully, absolutely looking for ways to expand perspective, to deepen inner knowing, to become more connected with themselves so that they can navigate their path. So maybe that does talk something about my sense of role as a coach, as a presence, a companion to help the people I'm with to be more in touch with themselves so they can navigate their own path. That might be the best articulation I have in this moment.
I'm in conversation with people about, almost like a post-systemic consciousness where, I can pick up roles as needed, but I'm not wedded to a particular role. And so there's a more fluidity and attunement to what's actually appropriate. And I wonder, you in a sense, like I'm hearing you speak to the value, part of the value you bring to your clients is this. This being at the edge and sense making. Could you say more about, what is it? What is it you do that you think your clients find most valuable? I know you've been successfully coaching for quite a long time, and this is your full-time career, and you're in demand. Like, could you say a bit more? What do you? Why do you think your clients value you so much? What are you doing?
I'm not sure it's one thing. I think there is something in a way of being, offering a way of being in relationship that allows for a kind of an expanding of the vessel that one individual being, one individual psyche is, offering a meeting that allows an expansion of that vessel where the person I'm working with, their inquiry, their need, their question, or even just their exasperation at how annoying the day has been, has more space to unfold, then it can be seen. Then maybe a bit of compassion come into it. Maybe it's just a kind of a venting and they feel kind of discharged at the end of it. Sometimes there's meaning making. A piece of feedback I quite often get is, "Ah, oh, you're doing that silence thing again." Which comes as a surprise to me because I don't have a sense of doing a silence thing. But sometimes the space just feels so full that no language comes. And then it's just being with what's there until there's an energetic shift, either in my body or in the person I'm working with the body, or just in the space between, and then we move on. So in that way, it's, oh, what am I doing? Kind of relational dancing, energy practice with language. Sometimes it's just really pragmatic, practical stuff. I was with someone this morning, and he's quite early in his career, and we talked about ambition. And I just asked a question, something like, I can't remember how I formed it, but I was basically asking kind of what's that about? What's the ambition about? And it had been such a given for him that ambition is a good thing. To then be asked to unpack the idea of ambition was a new thing. And quite a vulnerable thing because it suddenly did that question, the value of ambition, don't know. So it was also allowing a certain awkwardness that just arises from curiosity, not interrogating, not to have someone justify their position, but just to be able to bring light into, bring a question into what's been taken for granted. So what am I doing there? I don't know, what do you hear?
Well, again, I'm struck by what it's like to be in connection with you. And there's a way in which I feel you inquiring into the questions I'm asking you. You know, it's like you're modeling a mode of being, which, you know, it's so everything you're sharing with me feels kind of fresh and like you're really inside of what you're talking about, so that it's not stale, but there's a kind of freshness to it, like I said. And so I'm here, so that's what I'm struck by. And then I'm curious, you know, as you talked about relational dancing, and I think you said energy management with language or through language, like. Could you say more about that? And in a sense, like I'm curious, one of the questions I love exploring with people is like, what are you tracking? I'm hearing attunement. I'm hearing, in a sense, like you're attuning to the client, and there's a kind of attitude of curiosity. And could you share more about that? And what do you track in the moment with your clients? And again, I know that could be like, well, it's like many things and it's very unique, but I love to kind of see if there are patterns to what you're tracking.
Sometimes I'm tracking my own breathing, my own body sense, my own kind of nervous state. And then checking, either making it transparent, saying, "Oh gosh, I've stopped breathing now. Are you breathing?" Or if I notice I've stopped breathing, I have a sense of, "Gosh, I feel like I'm on edgy territory inside myself." And then offer that back. Is that what it's like for you? Or I might not make that reveal. I might just ask, how is it in your body right now? What are you noticing? But the question comes from that tracking my own system. If we can see each other, then sometimes I can actually, through the either the physical presence or just through the Zoom image, just say, okay, you haven't moved for a while. What's going on? So tracking the physicality of the other. Sometimes I have to check, has Zoom frozen, or are you, is that a tech issue or something else happened? So tracking those things, tracking language, and whether the language being used and the content feel harmonious or dissonant. The first, this is one of the things that was told in when I was training, like it's all in the first session. So in the first session, I write a lot, but often noticing that what comes up in the check-in before we've gone into content, that might also come back as something really significant for the content we're working in, either just in something in the language that's being used, or a parallel process. Ah, right, you checked in with this is what's happening with your daughter. And now you're telling me how you're working with a colleague. Do you notice anything about how, is there an echo for you in that? There's an echo for me in that. Tracking themes between conversations. So if it's a longer coaching engagement, either over years or just a number of sessions, are we looping? Is there a similarity in challenge? Is there a total disconnect? Gosh, that's interesting. What happened there? That was such a big thing before. Where is it now on your horizon? As I speak it out to you, I notice how many threads there are. Yeah. And right now, as I talk to you, I notice I still have a bit of performance anxiety. So that might also be something that I offer back in a conversation. Like, wow, do you have a sense of that? Do you have a sense of somehow needing to be the right thing for the moment? So yeah, another way of using my experience of the moment to see if, is that just me? Or is that, am I resonating with something that's in the field we're co-creating?
And I love the, I can feel the potential for us to explore that, like, oh, is there something in me right now that's feeling like we need to get, to get to somewhere or to have a good podcast or something. And but I won't do that. What I actually really want to highlight is how I love how you're speaking about that. You're just revealing your own experience in connection with the client, and that it seems to me that that can reveal so much in terms of maybe if I frame it like this. There's like a, there's ways we can talk about change and transformation and things I want in my life, and we can explore how that's showing up now, and that's really powerful. But it's also really powerful when we start to connect to like what's it like in the moment to be in connection with the client, and how they're showing up with me. And so I'm hearing that there's a possibility for that as you're sharing, your sense of connection with the client, but not with this is how you are, but it's more, it's always with a kind of curiosity. I'm just checking, like, so.
Yeah, I'm very aware that the conversation I'm having with that person is just one conversation of all that they'll have in that day, in that week, in that month. And it can feel like there's continuity through a coaching relationship that develops and deepens over time. And it's still only one angle on that person's life. So there may be intimacy and depth and warmth and expansiveness that shows up in a coaching conversation. doesn't say anything about who they are in another relationship. And I have to keep remembering that because working with people over years, it can feel like we know each other. But it's one channel, it's one thread. So I have to stay curious because thinking I know that person is be so naive. But maybe not. Maybe there is something very profoundly true in that connection. I trust that there is, but I also trust that it's partial. It's just one part of
Yeah.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. That there's something about how contextual we are, the way I show up with my daughter and my stepson and my wife and my colleagues, there's a and the danger of assessing people, seeing them in one place and assessing that that's how they are, because that's often what I hear is like how you show up now is how you show up everywhere. And I think there's a truth to that too, but it's let's hold things lightly. I get very curious, what do you think is the shift you made that opened you into being a better coach? And yeah, I've got a second part to that question, but is there, maybe probably it's like many things incrementally over time, but I wonder what the shift was that for you that allowed you to do deeper coaching.
As you are, there are different pieces that sort of stand out as I kind of scan back over my biography. There was, I think, a big piece about letting go of attachment to what should happen in a coaching session. And sometimes it still gets me. Sometimes I'm so moved by what's happening that I really want to help. And then I think there's a danger for me of collapsing in on the space between, and I find the space between so enormously productive. So loosening that attachment to what I think a good coaching conversation is, or where I think I want us to get us to. And then I think outside of the, and actually this is related now I think of it, outside of the very particular craft of coaching, there are pieces that I think have helped me to feel significantly safer as a human being on earth, that have helped me to offer a more expansive presence in the coaching conversation. And one of the pieces I'm thinking now is I remember a point, maybe 13, 14 years ago, where I was experiencing high anxiety, and I thought I'd just have a go at connecting with the elements and thanking them for being here. And I felt so kind of white and Western and awkward in it. But I started to thank the water that came out of the shower. I crossed over the Thames as I was on my way to the tube station. I thanked the water in the river, thanked the trees for being there, thanked the earth for holding me, thanked the air for being there and putting space between things, and for all of the elements, for giving thanks for the opportunity to incarnate and experience this extraordinary earthly arrangement. And it shifted me from feeling like a tolerated guest to a part of the whole in a much more profound, embodied, way. And I think that it attended to something of a very early wound in me, that had me running on the belief that I need to somehow earn my welcome, which I think also then came into my facilitation and coaching work, as I have to do a good job in order to earn the fee, keep people happy, And it sort of just allowed me to be with a greater sense of I'm part of the whole. I'm welcome just by virtue of being here. And now how do I think from there came a different quality of daily prayer. That went something like, help me to be part of the unfolding of the most beautiful dream of this earth. Come through me in a way that helps that to be. I don't always remember to do that, and sometimes I'm really insecure in my welcome on earth. But those practices of thanking the elements, making a prayer that what comes through me is of service to this extraordinarily beautiful and complex arrangement. That made a big difference, I think.
I think you're answering this, but it does make me want to ask, like, what was that difference? Could you say more about that? I know you said, there was a maybe a tension of not feeling fully welcome, or that maybe I was bringing into my coaching. But I wonder. I think we're in very deep, profound territory here. I wonder what it brought to your coaching.
Probably greater ease and trust in silence. And trusting that silence and space are not, they're not empty, they're not voids. They're creative spaces from which something will arise. And I don't have to do something to make that arise. I need to show up, and I need to show up as fully and with as much humility and sincerity and integrity as I can. But if I try, then the trying is somehow an a betrayal of the potential for what we can co-create through attuning, attending, allowing. And I think I could probably have imagined that, but maybe not dared it fully before. And there must have been enough of that before to allow it to deepen. Or maybe there wasn't. I don't know. It's a sort of insight that as I shine the light on it, it becomes harder to see.
Do you think this is, in a sense, your calling? Like, is this, we talked about soul before we hit record, and if I reflect a little bit, like what I feel and hear is, in a sense, like you started to connect to something very deep and something that moved you, that something that was very much about your deepest cares, and something bigger than you that connect the sense of connection, and there was a sense of intelligence in the frequency of all of that that came through you as you met with your clients. And I wonder, my take on that would be like, oh, this is Juliet's unique offering as a coach, and that the more she embodies that and journeys with that, the probably the less that she feels like she's doing, and the more impact she has.
To ask the question, a memory came to me of a conversation I had with a woman who works as a spiritual guide, an exercise I did with her where we were invited to I might ask and then declare, you know, what's this soul here for now? And what came to me was, and again, I'm going to say something that I might feel a bit naked in public about afterwards. What came to me was, you know, I'm here to be part of a remembering, and a restoring and a making a stand for, the divine feminine. And in that encounter with the divine feminine, being able to give more trust and love into what is pre-form, what is pre-articulated, what might look and feel very boggy, and to extend appreciation into that, and to then be with it for myself, to be more gracious with my own phases of feeling like I'm groping around in the dark, and trusting, okay, that's an initiatory process. And maybe that does come back to the idea of soul and growth of soul. If I can let myself I don't know what verb to use, but kind of melt out of ideas of what I am, who I am, and allow life to work through me, then I will regain form. And then there'll be another round of generativity, of creativity, of co-creation. And that's not going to last. There will be another melting required. So, is it vocation? I think it is vocation, of being called to be in relation to take form, to lose form, to hold knowing lightly. And I think, is that vocation? Yes, I think I, when I can be faithful to that, even if it's sometimes disorientating, I don't find myself grasping. If I lose faith in that, then I can find myself grasping and think, oh my goodness, maybe I really do need to create a website and a this and a that and a LinkedIn profile. And those things come from a sense of inadequacy rather than a confident positioning myself in the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, very much, very much. Yeah, I'm touched by the way you describe it, and I think it's interesting as you articulate this. It's like it's the, you know, I'm here with you in this live conversation. I'm curious how this shines through to people listening, but I think it will. But it because I hear that from people who listen. But it that's you're helping me to tune in more to like, oh, what's this frequency I feel with Juliet that's here, that's palpable and inviting me into a particular space. So it makes sense what you say to me. And I'm struck by how, let me see, like, you know, my bias is that this is something possible for us. And that one of the invitation of our times is to, you know, I'm always cautious about it. It's a bit kind of a little bit arrogant to say the invitation of our times, like I really know that, you know. But see, it feels a little safer ground to say my bias, my preference is like that. This is a place we can, this place of moving beyond the parts of us that want to. You know, I need a website or I need to do this or that, but that we can move beyond that into a space of ensouled expression, which isn't motivated by the same things and has a qualitatively different feel. And that the other thing that strikes me, Juliet, is when I ask people this question, what moves you as a coach? In a sense, that's kind of where I'm struck by how there is this like utter uniqueness about the answer. It's like so individual, so beautiful. And commonly it's like it's all about serving the emergence of life. So there's a kind of like meta theme, that it's I think it's I think I do think it is in our, of our times that we're moving into this space that you're describing, that and that the feminine is a really it's been a a quality that's been marginalized and is coming to the center and holds many gifts for the way we move, we could move through this. Yeah.
There are two things in my mind. One is, as you were feeding back to me the experience of the conversation and that sense of being invited into a particular space, I'm wondering if you can give more language to that. What is your sense of the space you're invited into? What happens inside you? What's that like?
Yeah, it's so you talked about silence. First of all, it's like I can feel a palpable sense of silence, not as an uncomfortable kind of, like space between things, but actually as a kind of container, within which things are arising, which allows for a certain pace of consideration. Like I feel very relaxed in terms of just being at the edge of what we're sensing together. So that's, I think, the most striking thing. It's like I see, yeah, the way I see you responding to the questions I'm asking, but mostly it's this sense of sense making and silence being a key part of that. I think it's the last thing I'd say. I think it's the frequency that's the key. Is like it's not a rational intellectual space, but it's a felt sense of this container.
Thank you.
You said something about groups and helping people make meaning of what they do. I think, was that coaches you were referring to?
Not only, but including, yeah.
Yeah. I'm imagining you bring some of the same skills and ways of holding that space, but could you say more about why do you have those groups? Like, why are they important?
I mean, the top level, kind of superficial level answer is that I have those groups because people ask for them. Groups ask for them. In the past, team leaders have asked for them. And people have said to me something like, I want your eyes on the team, or can you hold the space for us? And I think there's something with the question of why is that important? So there are different levels, I think. I think sometimes coaching, it can be an individual strand between, as this conversation is, it's one strand between us. And to have a gathering of coaches, a gathering of facilitators, where the practitioners can land in a group of peers and share their experience without having to, what's the word, without having to serve any other function or any other purpose. So in a way, holding a space in which people can come out of role with other people who wear a similar role, I think offers an opportunity to be together in our humanity, to be nourished in our craft, in the persona of our, I don't know how to gender this, craft personhood. And in some way, just to feel simply less alone in the work, less alone in the world. I think that's always, think it's always helpful. But yeah, I guess the people who don't find it helpful won't show up.
So in a sense, I'm hearing maybe there's not like a curriculum for the group, so to speak, as much as it's about coming together and being, in presence together. With often there are coaches there, and it's you said like making meaning. So it's it, is it engaging in this, what's most alive for me, or what is something I'd like to bring into the space? And then you're doing that collectively, and there's a kind of intimacy and shared unfolding that can take place in the group.
Yes, and I have a learning agenda for those spaces. I want to feel like I'm learning, and I hold a bias that learning is a good thing, and that doing it together offers more richness than doing it alone. And then if I think, what do I mean by learning? It's something about expanding our cognitive frameworks. Expanding our ability to metabolize what's happening in our body, in our emotions, and in our patterns of thinking in relation to either the work we're doing or the experience of being together in the moment. So I have an agenda for expansion and wholeness, healing, probably in any space that I'm holding, even though there might be other agendas running. That's an agenda, a bias that I take with me.
It's beautiful how you've just kind of coalesced several kind of open questions into one phrase. So, you said expansion and wholeness and healing. I'm wondering how they connect. Let me sh I think expansion is an interesting one because it seems like we can, it's a core kind of function of being human. Like we can contract and reify our experience, which creates a certain way of being in the world, or there's a way of expanding out, opening to expanded states. And what I'd love, actually, rather than me saying what I think, actually, just to kind of ask you, what are those things, and why are they important, and how do you go about them? And it brings up the question around the difference between therapy and coaching, which I'll just seed now, and then I'll bring in more explicitly as a question if we don't get there naturally. Yeah, what are those things to you? Expansion, wholeness, and healing, and
If I zoom out and look at those languages, those concepts, those functions, I have a sense that as human beings, we are potentially vast. That the human heart is a complex, beautiful, potent thing. And I don't always go about my day-to-day business knowing and living that. So there's something in my sense of expansion and healing that feels like it's about remembering remembering who I am, who we are, remembering maybe from before we came into the conversation, before we came into this lifetime, what did we come here for? What an extraordinary time to incarnate. What's my part? How in my life am I working with the some of the meta tussles of patriarchy and capitalism and colonialism and the whole package of modernity? I chose to come into this. Gosh, that's an extraordinary choice. What's how to be generative in that and generative together? If we chose to come, and there's an assumption I'm making that we chose to come into this lifetime at this time, and you and I chose at the same time, so somehow we chose to come together. What's the potential of me, of us in the work we do? So it's in that way, kind of blowing the limitations of the horizon that I might have walked through my day with, just from getting my daughter to school, for which no one gave me a medal, and sometimes it needs a medal. And then, doing all the domestics and operating on that very kind of perfunctory plane of organizing matter. But actually, if I and we are these vast beings, what's possible? I mean, even just like, how does it improve my getting my daughter to school just by remembering that I'm a vast being? And I have a lot of wounds that stop me remembering that I'm vast. And that my ego will kind of shrink around and have me shrink so I don't show up as big just in case something happens. Or and so it's I feel happier and more connected to life when I have that bigger way of knowing myself and relating to others. And I think then I can be a more effective participant in creation. So that's kind of, yeah, big answer to the question. How does that sound?
I love it. Do you work with that dynamic with your clients? I'm imagining so. I say that because this is something I commonly notice with my clients where, there might be something there coming at a topic where there's a challenge, and then that challenge is a pathway through to that expansion. Often there's a kind of secondary reaction to the challenge where they want it to go away and they don't like it and they feel like it's in the way. So there's a polarization. And so we can kind of start to create a space where it can just land and they can kind of disidentify from the parts that want to solve the challenge. And then that opens up a kind of flow where expansion can begin to unfold. And I wonder if you notice similar things if you work in that way with your clients.
I notice similar things in terms of an expansion being possible when we can hold the challenge as the challenge that the person I'm working with is experiencing in their life, when we can hold that as a an opportunity for expansion. And I can bring in that perspective of this might be an opportunity. Let's have a look. The bigger picture of actually what did you incarnate for? It's much more rare that I bring that in. And I think it's, I think even think it comes up in this conversation because it's possible between us. It's not always accessible in a coaching conversation. And maybe that takes me back to something earlier in our conversation about the experience of being at the edge of myself. Do you dare bring in the incarnation question? And then trusting if it's come to me in this moment, it must be possible to bring it in without blowing the container. And by blowing the container, I mean, well, if that's just going to be a so far outside of the frame of reference that the person I'm talking to has, then the conversation might just be scuppered. But if I trust that it wouldn't have come to me unless the container can hold it, right then, let's dare it.
I love this. This is, yeah, it's like a pre-trans thing going on. Like Ken Wilber's had this phrase, pre-trans folly. So if you're not careful, if one is not careful earlier on in your journey, you can bring all kinds of things in that are projections and your own agendas, and that's not serving the client. So then you get good training and you go into this mid space where you're cohering to the training you've gotten, but it can deaden your access to what you're describing so beautifully. And my sense is one of the openings into mastery is when we open back into that kind of intuitive space, but it's not, but we but we've matured enough that we're not projecting, or there's not transference going on with our clients. It's just like we can trust that knowing our perception is attuned enough that we can bring it in. And it's where we access our genius and the magic.
As you say that, I noticed that I tripped over a bit with the mentions of projection and transference. I certainly still have to check whether something has resonance, just to check, am I in attunement or am I in projection? So I need to stay current with the checking. But there's something else that's coming to me about what is possible within our language, within our minds as they've been trained by our culture, where we have really useful labels for attunement, projection, and transference. And I have a sense that they're useful in staying awake to ourselves, and that maybe they're also limiting, and just part of the limitation of our language that doesn't allow us a full articulation of what happens in the space between us, what happens in our connection with the wider field, with the air, with I've got an oak tree out my window that I'm gesturing to. What I have no idea what happens to me or what comes through me that is in relation with the wider environment. I don't have a clear idea of that because of the training I've had in how to think and be a human in Western European culture. So I notice I have both appreciation and then a suspicion of the language, and also a hunger for, gosh, how do I get beyond my own thinking patterns, my own linguistic access?
It's beautiful, Juliet. So let me share something. When I shared that comment about projection and transference, inside of that for me, there's a little almost like inherited part sitting on my shoulder that's like, it's a, how could I describe it? But it's inherited. It's come a little bit from people I've spoken to who've brought that challenge to the field of coaching. And it doesn't, something about it doesn't quite sit right in me. And I just wonder if you picked up on that. So not only you brought a great challenge to the paradigms we find ourselves within, you know, like the therapeutic paradigm, which without with those terms that we're born from, you know, is also limited. With the gifts it has, it's also limited. And so that's a beautiful challenge. And I wonder if you picked up a little bit on the kind of slight dissonance with how it was sitting within me. Well, let me see if that anything comes up, and then we can take the kind of inherited systems exploration a little bit further.
It's a really beautiful question, thank you. The top line answer, I don't know. And I just noticed I felt a dissonance inside myself. And I thought, if I don't speak to that, then I'm going to be in some strange contortion in order to let the conversation flow. But that
Exactly.
would somehow be a betrayal of the conversation, so I'll bring it. And in you saying, ah, you had that. So maybe I was picking up on something, but I didn't know I was picking up on something until you said it. So maybe it was a resonance, and maybe it's a co-arising. Don't
Yeah, and in a way, it doesn't really matter
know.
exactly what it was, but just what you modeled for me is what I aspire to modeling in my coaching. I think I do at times, and it's like, yeah, you in a way, you actually you demonstrated what you were saying, you know, which is like I felt this thing, and I didn't let it go. I didn't just let it go. Like I brought it in service of the connection, and it would have somehow felt inauthentic. Maybe that's not quite the right word, but you know, if we'd continued, it would have felt like a contortion. So this is a capacity I think we can bring to our clients. And so that's beautiful. And then just coming back, and it kind of goes back to the therapy coaching boundary question that I brought, which is, you know, the word coach even feeling too small, you know, in a sense, like what are the notions of what it means to be a coach that we inherit from the trainings and modernity. And that's one of the questions we get a lot in our trainings, you know, like, but this feels like we're moving into therapy. You've said the word healing. How do you hold that?
There are some conversations where I'm aware that the we, whoever the we is in the moment, are leaning out of the terrain prescribed by the initial contract. And then I will pause and check. You know, we are right on the edge of what this coaching contract has set up for us. Do you want to go into that place? And I'm thinking of someone who was, you know, her mother had died, and a lot was moving through her. Another person who was working with some PTSD from spinal surgery. Both of these people are school leaders or leaders within the school system. And so there I check if they feel well enough in our togetherness to go beyond the prescription of how the coaching was offered to them by their em the people that employ them. There are other coaching relationships which are, we feel so mature in it that the conversation can drop very quickly out of the arena of how does this person navigate their day to day? And we might explore much more kind of minute somatic experiences for a chunk of the conversation. And then as we come towards the end of the coaching the time that's been allocated for it. And then coming back up and checking how does that inform? And just giving enough time to come back into a mode of being where it's more like kind of, okay, now we're back in daytime consciousness. Are you ready to re-enter? So that's kind of the practicals of how I hold it. Ethically, I suppose that's also touches on the ethics. I suppose one thing that does feel important to say is I know there are areas that are beyond my skill. I know that I am slow to spot depression. If there are patterns that come up in the conversation that I feel like I'm not penetrating, we're not penetrating this, then I'll say, you know, this is, I don't feel like I can, I'm helpful here. Please, will you go and find another avenue, maybe go and find a therapist to work on this. So it feels important there to be in integrity with where I can accompany. And maybe also to say, look, I can accompany that. I'm not a therapist. So there will be things that I won't say, that I won't know. Do we go into the exploration together? And then there's a conversation there. And there's a whole other piece in me about what does it mean to be accompanying other human beings through the day to day or the year to year. What is the language we give it? What are the labels that will somehow give us currency in the world? And are they just I have to say this, like, is it a passport into the conversation? And then the conversation goes where it goes. And there are times where I have a sense of, you know, we are so far off piste of what would be, what might be considered conventional coaching. But this is the conversation that is being called for right now. And if I have a sense that there's enough trust to go in and also to know when to say, okay, I need to pause here, either of us. I need to pause here because I'm not breathing, because I don't feel safe, because this is blowing my mind and I've got a meeting to go to, whatever it is, that stop is always an option. That for me feels like a very important ethic as we surf boundaries of disciplines.
And do you think your sense of spaciousness or your attunement to space is important in everything you just described? As in, maybe that's a guide, you know, that if you feel that you encounter something that you don't. You know, a pattern that you feel like I'm not able to kind of support with this, or that maybe you start to feel a disconnection from that sense of space, and that's a moment to say like, oh, I can feel now I'm maybe over my edge, or yeah, and not in best service if I carry on here to my client.
Yes, absolutely. And checking is, are you all right in this conversation? Are you breathing? Let's pause for a moment. Is there anything that you need now before we go any further, as an alternative to going any further? Because my attunement might be perfectly reliable and it might not be. And I think this is where understanding a bit of how we show up in states of trauma feels so important, just recognizing that how easily one can nod and say yes and continue if one's conditioning is that way oriented. And then we are fawning in order just to endure the moment. I don't want to be I don't want to be in that dynamic. So in that way, that my attunement is, I rely on it massively, and I need to keep checking that the other person is still in their driving seat.
I think you're naming for me, like trauma sensitivity, being trauma informed is, one of the, I think, important facets of being a coach, or at least for me, I hold that as being important, holding the types of spaces we're talking about today. And it makes me think about, as we move to the end of our conversation, see, I imagine you're engaged in your own continuous development and training, and or I'm curious, what is it you're excited by? What's informing the edge of your coaching right now? So, are there modes of practice you're inspired by or drawn to, or certain teachers, or and how do you stay immersed in your own development as a coach? Like,
I'm at a very particular point in my own life of being in a big transition. So over the past few years, I accompanied my mother to the end of her days and left a community that I've been living in for a long time. So it's been a while since I could really immerse in a study. Before that, I took a deep dive into somatic approaches, and did what I found a really precious training with Bodynamic, looking at it was actually a psychotherapy training, looking at what do they call it? So somatic psychotherapy for shock trauma. Working with PTSD from shock trauma, and then also looking at a developmental psychology through a somatic lens, and I followed my nose into that because I was having really outrageous hay fever and getting flashbacks to traumatic periods in my life in the pitch of hay fever. So I wanted to know, is hay fever a symptom of trauma? And so that took me into a dive for a couple of years. And at the moment, in this experience of relocating, trying to find ground again, having moved countries in a new kind of post-parent phase of my life, where I keep going back to, to find ground is my Qigong practice, as a way of kind of putting my house in order. And what I find very precious in that, both with the teacher that I'm totally blessed to have, and also my own practice, is how simple and how few the cognitive frameworks are, so that I don't feel seduced by ideas of how things should be, but I can be in a practice that helps me to be whole and expansive, so that I feel like I stand on more reliable ground inside myself, and then I can trust myself more in the interaction with others. In terms of what am I curious about and attracted by, I am really curious about how different modes of psychotherapy can be brought into coaching. I am really curious about how what has been talked of as kind of shamanic paths, how that is a way of reclaiming something, what it means to be human on Earth, and how that can then be brought in the in conversations for healing and learning. And that's edgy terrain, because it's so easily it's so normal in our culture to appropriate, productize, and then accredit. And I feel that the there is a sacredness in the direct contact with life that I don't want to package. But it's where a big part of my curiosity goes at the moment.
Beautiful. Yeah, I just share your wholeness is something we didn't talk about, but I think it is a big, as a lived experience as opposed to just an idea. Because people in coaching talk about wholeness. We're already whole, but actually, what is it like as a, not as a concept, but as a lived experience? And I feel that's a big thing these days, and or as is like the role of like expanded states in healing and leadership. I see in our field growing numbers of like really integrous practitioners working with imaginal states and expanded states, and I think that's partly the psychedelic revolution is kind of fueling that too. So yeah, and how come, I'm also like, how come, what are my indigenous shamanic roots? Because we're all indigenous, so what are the Western European indigenous shamanic roots that I might tap into? So I think that's my way of kind of tuning in. Juliet, I really appreciate what you stand for and just who you are, and this conversation's felt, I mean, we spoke about that at the start, didn't we? What can co-arise between two people? I've really valued that. So thank you. And I don't know if there is anywhere you want to point people to who want to connect with you or just at least find out about your work.
I need to come back to you once I've worked out how to be accessible.
Well, it's even a good consideration. Do I want to be accessible? It's like it's actually just taken as a given, isn't it? That's one of those things, isn't it? I need to promote myself or be visible, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I have a sense of I want to be accessible. But I don't know how to do that yet. And for sure, there is this the online course that I mentioned, which is it's not a coaching program, but it is about the bigger pictures that all of our coaching takes place within, looking at actually what our post-capitalist possibilities for our time. And that's edgy given that so many of our clients are profit-oriented organizations. And I think that's part of the edge that certainly that I am called to walk at the moment. And I can send you the information about that program.
And great. If you want, we can link to that on the show notes as well.
Lovely. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Juliet.
Thank you. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the conversation.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is for me the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches. Because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign-up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.